the century since the fall of the Ottomans, no political project proved more successful and more calamitous than Arab nationalism. Modern Arab nationalism was born in the Levant in the second half of the 19th century. Although Egypt was the first part of the Ottoman Empire to be truly exposed to westernization and serious modernization, starting with the Napoleonic campaign on Egypt from 1799 to 1802, and later because of the major reforms during the reign of Muhammad Ali Pasha, despite all of that, the Levant in the 19th century became highly exposed to Western, especially French, political and social ideas. This was partly because the Levant had, by its social composition, different sizable Eastern Christian groups that had always been inspired by Europe. It was also because the Levant was, throughout most of the 19th century, an open environment with increasingly weak central authority and tenuous links to Istanbul, the Ottoman nerve center. As the Ottomans' hold over the Levant and the entire Mashraq grew weaker, different political ideas came to the surface, aiming to inherit Ottomanism. The idea of an Arab identity was one of the most attractive to large groups in the Levant because it was anchored on a secular view of history. Secularism was key to Arab nationalism because despite the reforms that the Ottomans had introduced in the mid-19th century that aimed to install political equality between Muslims and non-Muslims in the empire, 4 centuries of Ottoman rule had left strong feelings of religious demarcation in almost all provinces of the empire. In some cases, periods of Ottoman oppression of religious minorities had left feelings of strong rejection of anything Ottoman or Turkish. Actually, save for a thin layer of social elite in the empire's eastern provinces, rejecting Ottomanism was quite a widespread feeling even among large sections of Muslims. And for those who objected to sectarian identities, such as Islamist or political Maronism or others that had begun to appear in the Levant, secularism was at the core of what they aspired to replace Ottomanism. Arabness had the ingredients of a strong secular national identity. The Arabic language, with its extremely rich poetry, literature, and philosophical heritage, was an omnipresent cultural framework that had already brought together the peoples of the Levant and North Africa, for whom, centuries earlier, Arabic had become mother tongue. It was a natural step for this cultural identity to evolve into a political project. Unlike the idea of a greater Syria that the previous episode in this series presented, Arab nationalism was grounded in material examples in history. Despite the fact that since the emergence of Islam in the 7th century, almost all the identities that had ruled the region extending from the Arabian Peninsula to the Maghreb had anchored the rule on forms of Islamic legitimacy, Arabness was, throughout that period and across the entire region, close to and entangled with political power and authority. The Hashemite project, which the second episode in this series presented, gave strong momentum to Arabness. For Sharif Hussein and his sons, who came to rule Syria, Jordan, and Iraq, had all fought the Ottomans, negotiated with external powers, and built their kingdoms on the basis of, in their narrative, noble Arabness. Add to that the Arabs were a nation for centuries since Islam had united them and gave them an overarching socio-political framework. And for centuries, this socio-political framework has been extending Arabness beyond the Arabian Peninsula, particularly in the Levant, Iraq, and North Africa. This Arabness was a marked distinction from the Turkishness and Persianness of the wider Middle Eastern Muslim majority societies that had accepted Islam but rejected the Arabic language. And so throughout the first half of the 20th century, Arab nationalism was a potent power with major potential because it resonated with the history and cultural affiliation of the largest social groups in the Arabian Peninsula, Iraq, the Levant, and parts of North Africa. But it was a change that had taken place in Egypt in the mid-20th century that catapulted Arab nationalism to the stratosphere of Middle Eastern politics. Gamal Abdel Nasser's overthrowing of the Egyptian monarchy, the oldest and most established in the entire Mashriq, was in itself a momentous event. But Nasser's adamant challenging of old imperial powers, Britain and France, in Egypt, and support for freedom movements across the region, gave rise to the idea that Nasser had a political project whose aspirations transcended Egypt and went beyond mere driving colonialism out of the Mashriq. Many groups across the Levant, the Arabian Peninsula, and North Africa quickly developed an attachment to this nascent project, even though the project's core and contours were at the time still malleable. When Gamal Abdel Nasser nationalized the Suez Canal, dealing a strong blow to the British Empire and challenging the entire architecture of Western interests in the region, his project acquired both clarity and tremendous momentum. Nasser did not nationalize the Suez Canal, the most prized and most strategic Western-controlled asset in the entire Middle East, in the name of Arab nationalism. He nationalized it to finance some of his most ambitious developmental projects, and, at least equally important, to demonstrate his defiance of Western power in the region. That defiance resonated with a widespread desire for freedom from Western influence. And at a deeper level, it resonated with what seemed to be a call emanating from history to resuscitate Arab dignity after centuries of Ottoman and then Western domination of the Mashriq. And since Nasser was a secularist who had already been on a clashing course with the Islamists of Egypt, and since he had personally fought Israeli forces in Palestine in 1948, secular Arabness almost naturally became the hue surrounding his glow. Arab nationalism acquired its hero. As I have argued in my book, Egypt on the Brink, the real power of Nasser's project was its emotional charge in Egypt and beyond, in the Arab world and across large parts of what is today called the Global South. What made Nasser a global leader on par with the likes of India's Jawaharlal Nehru and Yugoslavia's Tito was not merely his popularity in the Arab world and his strategic defeat of Britain and France in the Suez Crisis of 1956. It was his emergence as a reflection of a desire not only to destruct the colonial political order that had ruled the world before the Second World War, but to replace it with the most potent form of Arab nationalism the Arab world has ever witnessed. Tens of millions of Arabs saw in Nasser a symbol of their far bygone glorious past and a symbol of the potential that his project, his representation of a collective dignity, could reincarnate that past into their immediate future. That did not happen. Arab nationalism, whether of the Nasserite or of later variants, failed to materialize the potential of the future. And with the passing of decades, squandered all opportunities to make itself a catalyst to resuscitate the glorious past. The regimes that espoused Arab nationalism in the second half of the 20th century became synonymous with oppression, military defeats, institutional decay, one-man rule, and political vacuousness. The gap between the grandeur of the rhetoric that had surrounded Arab nationalism and the travesty of the reality of its implementation drowned the political project into flights to fancy by many of its believers, or abject hatred by scores of its opponents. This is a loss to modern Arab history. Because of its rich experience, 20th century Arab nationalism deserves a proper closure with and within the collective Arab psyche.